Hey everybody, sorry about the dead air thing. I didn't want anybody listening to dead air. We've just been working some of the gremlins out back there in the studio control room. Joe's got us set up. It is another beautiful Tuesday night. Actually, it's a night here without rain, so we're not dealing with that. We have been dealing with the after effects of a large storm from, I guess we'd say, over the weekend, and we also and deal with flash flooding. So that's always fun, you know, when you live at the delta of a very large river complex like the one that runs in the United States and goes like into the Mississippi River past New Orleans. That rainstorm comes up from the Gulf or from north in the United States, rains on you for 5, 6, 10 inches or so. It is going to flood the next day. So glad to know that everybody is, you know, as okay as can be expected given those circumstances. Going into craziness, this is a topic that we like to keep up with here with the Voice of the People radio show. Feds have charged one of Ajit Pai's broadband advisors for alleged $250 million fraud scheme. Now, we've been going back and forth. We have a little bit of a history with this on the show, about the AT&T and their latest net neutrality talking points about saving lives, Democrats unveiling plans to save the net neutrality. Recent headlines today, speaking of net neutrality, and the focus on the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, having a broadband advisor who is under investigation. Federal authorities have arrested the former CEO of an Alaskan telecoms firm who just so happens to be the very individual Federal Communications Commission chair and telecom plaque Ajit Pai tapped to run a broadband advisory panel on charges that she tricked investors into pouring $250 million into a fraud scheme. According to the Wall Street Journal, Quintillion Networks chief Elizabeth Ann Pierce. And Quintillion Networks is an LLC. Quintillion Networks LLC chief Elizabeth Ann Pierce had a very bad day last week. Elizabeth Ann Pierce, who served as CEO of Quintillion Networks LLC, allegedly convinced two investment companies that the firm had secured contracts for a high-speed fiber optic system that would generate hundreds of millions of dollars in future revenue. The Manhattan United States Attorney's Office and FBI said on Thursday the system was pitched as one that would provide service in Alaska and connect it to the lower 48 states, according to authorities. Now, between May 2015 and July of 2017, Ms. Pierce provided the two New York investment companies with forged broadband capacity sales contracts totaling about $1 billion to persuade them to invest in the fiber optic system, according to a complaint unsealed Thursday in Manhattan federal court. Now, Ms. Pierce surrendered to FBI agents in New York on Thursday evening, according to the Wall Street Journal, and could face a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison if convicted. The newspaper added that it was the other Quintillion employees who turned her into the Department of Justice after a customer, possibly the one whose signatures Pierce forged to trick the investment firms into giving her hundreds of millions of dollars, disputed invoices received from the company. Now, according to the website The Verge, Ajit Pai tapped Pierce to serve as chair of the Broadband Deployment Advisory Committee in 2017. The Broadband Deployment Advisory Committee was formed by the FCC for the purpose of reducing and removing regulatory barriers to infrastructure investment, which, given that it was staffed almost entirely by industry shills, seems to have been a euphemism for helping the FCC gut local oversight of telecoms networks. Santa Monica, California, Municipal Broadband Director Gary Carter told the website The Daily Beast that when he followed up on his application for a position on the BADC and identified himself as an employee from the city of Santa Monica, the gentleman on the phone laughed hysterically. Mr. Carter said, at first I didn't get the joke. When I saw the appointees for the municipal working group, only 3 out of 24 positions were from local government. And that's when I got the joke. Broadband industry advocate group Stop the Cap noted that Ms. Pierce secured the BDAC position after publicly complaining about supposed red tape in the Alaskan broadband deployment process. Ms. Pierce resigned from Quintillion in August of 2017 and BDAC a month after. Quintillion denounced her in a statement, but said the charges will not affect their ability to do business. Quintillion values its partnerships with customers and investors, and the alleged actions of Ms. Pierce are not aligned with how Quintillion conducts business. The ongoing investigation has not impacted Quintillion's operations nor the quality of its services. Quintillion continues to move aggressively to extend its network and provide world-class telecommunications to Alaska and beyond. You know, right now might be a good time to mention that Ajit Pai himself was reportedly being investigated in February of 2018 by the FCC's Inspector General to determine whether Ajit Pai improperly changed ownership rules to benefit Sinclair Broadcast Group, a conservative TV giant. Mr. Pai has since declined to investigate allegations that Sinclair Broadcasting forced local news affiliates to run segments parroting white right-wing propaganda about fake news. Excuse me, folks. Let me say that again. Ajit Pai has since declined to investigate allegations that Sinclair Broadcasting forced local news affiliates to run segments parroting right-wing propaganda about fake news against their will and in violation of broadcasting rules. The FCC has been reached out to for comment, and it will be updated if it is heard from again. You ask why is Ajit Pai being reportedly investigated by the FCC's Inspector General? Well, during his short tenure so far as chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Ajit Pai has made so many destructive and controversial decisions, it's hard to keep up. However, his decision to change broadcast TV ownership rules, clearing the way for a massive acquisition by Sinclair Broadcast Group, has always been one of the shadiest. And it was apparently so shady that the FCC's Inspector General has opened an investigation into any wrongdoing. Sinclair Broadcasting is currently seeking approval for a proposed $3.9 billion acquisition of Tribune Media that would put its stations in 7 out of 10 U.S. households. The deal raises concerns that this particular media blob would gut local television news coverage and place it in the hands of one all-controlling giant. Back in April of 2017, Ajit Pai's FCC changed the rules that cap how much ownership of local television markets a single entity can possess. Committees in both the House and Senate called for an investigation of any improper contact between Ajit Pai and executives of Sinclair. According to the New York Times, that investigation has actually been underway from some time. And from their report, we can quote, by the end of the year, in a previously undisclosed move, the top internal watchdog for the Federal Communications Commission opened an investigation into whether Mr. Pai and his aides had improperly pushed for the rule changes and whether they had timed them to benefit Sinclair Broadcast. According to Representative Frank Pallone of New Jersey and two congressional aides, it was unclear the extent of the Inspector General's investigation or when it might conclude, but the inquiry put the spotlight on Mr. Pai's decisions and whether there had been coordination with the company. It may also force him to answer questions that he has so far avoided addressing in public. Ajit Pai's relationship with big telecoms and media companies have been the subject of scrutiny since he took over the Federal Communications Commission agency, particularly his relationship with Verizon, for which he worked as a lawyer before joining the federal government. In November, the New York Times published an investigation that found that Ajit Pai and his aides had numerous contacts with Sinclair leadership, and Pai himself met with the company's executive chairman a few days before he took on his new role at the FCC. It's not a good idea to put so much control of local media into the hands of any single corporation, but Sinclair has been specifically worrisome due to its requirement that stations air must run packages of pre-recorded content that promotes a conservative agenda. Former Trump spokesman Boris Epstein became Sinclair's chief political analyst after leaving the White House, and according to a Politico.com report, the Trump campaign made a deal with Sinclair in 2016 that exchanged more access to the candidate in return for favorable coverage. We've reached out to the FCC and the Inspector General's office for comment on the newly disclosed investigation, and we'll update this when we receive any kind of reply. Now, following lawmakers' calls for an investigation last November, a spokesperson for EdgePay's office had told the New York Times newspaper, for many years, Chairman Pay has called on the FCC to update its media ownership regulations, they said. The chairman is sticking to his long-held views, and given the strong case for modernizing these rules, it's not surprising that those who disagree with him would prefer to do whatever they can to distract from the merits of his proposals. The FCC Inspector General, David L. Hunt, was appointed to his position in 2011 under the Obama administration, so there's little reason to believe that he would hold any favorable bias towards Trump's cabinet members. Numerous members of the administration are the subject of various investigations at the moment, including the EPA's Scott Pruitt, Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin, and his staff and Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, and of course, Russian election meddling and obstruction of justice. Throw in the recent resignation of Staff Secretary Rob Porter, which has set off a firestorm of concern over the 130 political appointees who still haven't managed to get a security clearance. And it's quite apparent that the Trump administration has had some staffing problems. Now, we have no word on the status of the investigation of Chairman Pay, but in the short term, it could easily complicate the Federal Trade Commission's review of the Sinclair broadcasting deal. So there you go. I mean, it's just been, and this is all about the net neutrality. Now on to the, you know, the next 300-pound gorilla that sits off in the room. Facebook, Microsoft, and dozens of other tech firms vow not to help governments wage cyber war. A coalition of leading tech companies on Tuesday today made public a vow never to aid any government in offensive cyber warfare, while also promising to increase information sharing about malicious code to stem the tide of cybercrime. Microsoft, Cloudflare, Facebook, GitHub, and Cisco are among the 34 major global technology and security companies that have signed on to the Cybersecurity Tech Accord, a multilateral pledge to work together and defend consumers against cybercrime. The real-world consequences of cyber threats have been repeatedly proved, said Kevin Sismer, chief operating officer at Trend Micro, which also signed the agreement. As an industry, we must band together to fight cyber criminals and stop future attacks from causing even more damage. The agreement, which calls to empower civilians online and to improve the security, stability, and resilience of cyberspace, promises that each company will avoid aiding governments in bolstering their offensive cyber capabilities, as well as protect against government tampering or exploitation of products and services from the development stage to distribution. We will not help governments launch cyber attacks against innocent citizens and enterprises from anywhere, the accord states. Now, notably, President Trump's incoming national security advisor, John Bolton, has frequently argued in favor of launching sophisticated and aggressive cyber attacks against America's digital adversaries, such as Russia, China, and Iran, often by citing Cold War nuclear deterrence theory. Now, in a February op-ed, John Bolton advocated launching a decidedly disproportionate retaliatory cyber campaign against Russia to teach Moscow that the cost of meddling in U.S. elections will be, John Bolton said, so high that they will simply consign all their cyber warfare plans to their computer memories to gather electronic dust. Now, Alex Stamos, Facebook's chief security officer, said that in signing on to the agreement, Facebook stood opposed to any nation state or organization that tries to exploit technology and the people that try to use it. Additionally, the company's committed to mounting a stronger defense against malicious code, joining forces to roll out new security practices and new features for companies to deploy in their individual products and services, and to improve technical collaboration, coordinate vulnerability disclosures, share threats, and minimize the potential for malicious code to be introduced into cyberspace. So the signatories said their first meeting would be held at the RSA Security Conference in San Francisco, which is taking place this week and would focus on capacity building and collective action. So there you go, a little bit about Ajit Pai, the FCC, the whole thing with the net neutrality, and then major tech companies vowing to not help governments wage cyber war. Now, you've heard a little bit about the FCC chairman. You know, another thing that is happening today, Mignon Clyburn, a fierce defender of net neutrality, is leaving the Federal Communications Commission. FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn, a passionate advocate for protecting net neutrality, announced plans today to step down from the agency. Ms. Clyburn is the only black voice on the five-member commission dominated by Republicans. She previously served as interim FCC chief in 2013, becoming the first African-American woman to lead the agency. The daughter of Representative James Clyburn, the third-ranking Democrat in the House, Ms. Clyburn's tenure at the FCC was largely spent advocating on behalf of America's poor, championing, for example, the Lifeline program, which promotes universal access to broadband and mobile services for economically strapped citizens. Nominated by President Barack Obama in 2009, Mignon Clyburn became one of the most outspoken proponents for net neutrality, calling the FCC's recent decision to repeal the 2015 rules that ensured net neutrality a significant attack on internet freedom. Now, prior to joining the FCC, Mignon Clyburn, a graduate of the University of South Carolina, was co-owner and general manager of The Coastal Times, a weekly Charleston newspaper with a focus on issues affecting the black community. During her time at the agency, she strenuously fought against the high cost of phone calls for prison inmates, noting once that 2.7 million children in this country have at least one incarcerated parent. Then young Clyburn will go down in history as one of the best FCC commissioners of all time, said Gigi Sohn, who was counselor to former FCC chairman Tom Wheeler. For nearly 9 years, she's been a vocal and passionate advocate for the public interest and defender of the most vulnerable in our society. FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel, the only other Democrat serving on the FCC Commission, said the following statement: Commissioner Clyburn has been a forceful advocate for change, for equal opportunity, and for closing the digital divide. It was a privilege to support her history-making leadership as acting chairwoman. It has been an honor to work alongside her to put consumers first and bring connectivity to those at greatest risk of being left behind, urban, rural, and everywhere in between. I am proud to have worked together with her to support net neutrality and grateful to have been her partner in her unwavering work to remedy the grave injustice of exorbitant prison phone rates. As she departs this agency, she should know her legacy is intact, because so many who work on communications policy will continue to be guided by her outstanding example, and I consider myself among them. In short, Commissioner Clyburn is a dynamo. She represents the best of public service. So, I mean, it's, and you got to wonder about why, you know, why somebody so well liked would would not want to be serving on the Federal Communications Commission. But it's just, you know, craziness, you know, total craziness. FCC says releasing jokes it wrote about Ajit Pai colluding with Verizon, where he was an attorney, would harm the agency. Okay, I mean, so we're going back a couple of months here, just so we can continue. It's not a hate on Ajit Pai Day, but, you know, what can you do? At its own discretion, the Federal Communications Commission has chosen to block the release of records related to a video produced last year in which FCC Chairman Ajit Pai and a Verizon executive joke about installing a Verizon puppet as head of the FCC. The agency said it was withholding the records from the public in order to prevent harm to the agency. An excuse experts say is a flagrant attempt to skirt federal transparency law. The video in question was played at an annual dinner hosted by the Federal Communications Bar Association in December, days before the Federal Communications Commission voted to repeal net neutrality protections established under the Obama administration. Ajit Pai's speech, taken from inside of the event where no media cameras were allowed to be present, were published on Gizmodo.com on December 8th of 2017. Part of Ajit Pai's routine involved a satire skit set in 2003 when he worked for Verizon as an associate general counsel. The skit featured Kathy Grillo, a Verizon senior vice president. Grillo and Pai hatch a plan to undermine the agency from within. We want to brainwash and groom a Verizon puppet to install as FCC chairman, Grillo says. Think Manchurian candidate. The jokes were exceedingly tone deaf given the ongoing net neutrality battle entering its most heated phase, though it caught plenty of laughs from an audience chock full of broadband industry lobbyists. Online, however, Ajit Pai's jokes about colluding with his former employer and being Verizon's shill came off as a bit more authentic than he had probably hoped. It didn't help that only a week before, Ajit Pai had given another speech at Verizon Communications headquarters in Washington, D.C., the substance of which organizers sought to keep secret. Yes, the video was intended as a joke, but ultimately Ajit Pai's decision to produce it and include a senior executive at Verizon, a company that he was poised to empower and enrich by billions of dollars by dissolving his own agency's regulatory powers, sent a clear message about where his loyalties lie. Ajit Pai's collusion with Verizon may not have begun in 2003, but on the evening of December 7th at the Washington Hilton Hotel, collusion was irreverently flaunted. Using the Freedom of Information Act, media has sought additional information from the FCC about how the video was put together. In particular, were there any communications records from within the chairman's office referencing the event or the Verizon executive? Now, nearly a dozen pages worth of emails were located, including draft versions of the video script and various edits. The agency is refusing to release them. However, it is reasonably foreseeable, it said, that doing so would injure the quality of agency decisions. Now, federal agencies are permitted, and in some cases required, to withhold records from the public under 9 exemptions outlined in the Federal Freedom of Information Act statute. In this case, the FCC claims the records about the Verizon video are being withheld under the deliberative process privilege, a broadly defined exemption to Freedom of Information Act intended to protect documents reflecting advisory opinions, recommendations, and deliberations comprising part of a process by which governmental decisions and policies are formulated. Now, more simply, the FCC argues that releasing any records about the parody video would harm the agency by hindering its employees from engaging in frank and open discussions in the future. The idea that it would be difficult for agency employees to do their job if every off-the-cuff idea they come up with is exposed to public scrutiny, said Adam Marshall, an attorney at the Reporters Committee for Freedom of Press. You know, only the video has nothing to do with actual FCC business. To argue that this video amounts to the same kind of deliberative process that goes on behind the scenes in terms of a federal agency deciding an official policy on a topic or what actions it's going to take is absurd, Mr. Marshall said. The deliberative process is frequently used to withhold embarrassing information or inconvenient information. I have no idea how a draft of a skit that was supposed to be funny would impair the FCC's decision-making process on anything, except on, I guess, maybe future skits. Nate Jones, director of the Freedom of Information Act project at the National Security Archive, says that the deliberative process privilege is the most widely abused Freedom of Information Act exemption. Jones also pointed to Obama-era guidelines still on the books. They read in part that while recognizing that the disclosure obligation under the Freedom of Information Act is not absolute, and that the Freedom of Information Act contains exemptions to protect, for example, national security, personal privacy, privileged records, and law enforcement interests, the guidelines stress that the president has directed agencies not to withhold information merely to prevent embarrassment or because errors and failures might be revealed or because of speculative or abstract fears. Mr. Jones said the bottom line is that even if this is a legally valid withholding by the FCC, it's not acting in the public's interest to hide this particular information. Due to an absence of case law around the deliberative process privilege, the FCC only really needs to claim that it reasonably foresees that disclosure would harm the agency. What's more, drafts of speeches are routinely withheld in response to public records requests. If an agency employee has an idea for a line or a topic in a speech, but it gets cut for whatever reason, they're within their legal rights to withhold it. It's normally applied, however, to substantive policy speeches and not jokey skits. You know, comment from Mr. Marshall again, I don't think that's the type of deliberation that Congress intended to be shielded from public disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, moreover, while the exemption protects deliberative material, the privilege does not apply to material that represents a final decision or action. For example, the final copy of Pei's script or the video file itself. Neither was released by the FCC. And the privilege does not generally extend to communications with outsiders, meaning any records of Pei's communications with Verizon would not be shielded. But when the FCC conducted its search for records related to the video, it returned no communications whatsoever with Kathy Grillo, the Verizon executive. It's unclear why, but it would be hypocritical of the FCC to claim the internal records reflect official agency business while also claiming that Pei's conversations with Kathy Grillo are personal and therefore exempt from public disclosure. The idea of the deliberative process privilege is that if you don't redact or withhold this information, people are unlikely to have deliberations on this in the future, said Austin Evers, executive director of the Freedom of Information Act watchdog group American Oversight. And I think that here, going back and forth over a parody video that's part of a public speech is unlikely to be the kind of speech that would be chilled by releasing it because it's silly and because it was part of a public presentation. I think the interest that they're trying to protect is very low, continues Mr. Evers, a former State Department senior counsel for oversight and transparency matters. You could argue that the public interest is quite high given the tone deafness of the jokes and the participation of his former employer in the video. I would find it difficult for them to really justify the withholding as protecting important deliberations, but that doesn't make it unlawful. The law allows the FCC to protect its employees' internal deliberations, but it also mandates that federal agencies don't withhold information merely to protect officials from embarrassment. And here we have those two principles clashing, Mr. Evers said, and they are asserting a very robust view of the deliberative process privilege in a way that, well, they probably should, you know, not to mention the fact that it's probably in very poor taste. You know, it's been almost 2 months. Net neutrality got its official execution date, but the fighting to keep it alive is going on strong. If all goes as the FCC's Republican commissioners planned, December 14th will be known as the day that net neutrality died. But thanks to the mercifully slow gears of the federal bureaucracy, big changes don't happen immediately. On Thursday, the Federal Communications Commission repeal of net neutrality protections is scheduled to hit the Federal Register. 60 days later, it will be official, but there's a lot happening in the meantime. Assuming that everything goes on schedule, FCC Chairman Ajit Pai's Restoring Internet Freedom order will be published in the Federal Register tomorrow and become formal policy for the agency sometime around April 23rd. There's no reason to believe that this FCC will reverse course on its own, but there are so many fights still to be resolved over the next year or so, and it's even possible that we won't have to wait until April to be reassured that all traffic on the web will be treated equally. Excuse me. Former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon recently told Bloomberg, the media, that his philosophy for dealing with deep media is to flood the zone with the S word of crap, so that it's hard to keep up. It's easy to see how that philosophy transfers to the Trump administration's approach to most subjects, be it intentional or through incompetence. Ajit Pai's leadership at the FCC may be filled with corporate cronyism and a disregard for what the public wants, but among Trump officials, he's very good at flooding the zone with crap and pushing through his agenda very quickly. Right now, he's moving to make access to broadband more difficult for the poor. Pay too much attention to that, and you might forget that the bad thing he did in December isn't done yet. So we recommend you stay focused on at least a single date, February 27th. The Senate currently needs a single additional vote to nullify the repeal of net neutrality. And that was back in February of 2018 by using the Congressional Review Act. Of course, that didn't happen, assuming at the time that they could pass the House in President Trump's veto. But all Senate Democrats had agreed at the time to vote in favor of the repeal, leaving the vote at a tie. So it's just, you know, there's more good news in that over half of the states in the United States are moving forward with their own net neutrality protections. California, New York, Montana, Hawaii, and Vermont all have legislation in the works that would preserve the internet that we know and hate to love. The Federal Communications Commission has said that states aren't allowed to pass their own net neutrality laws, but many are trying through various legal workarounds. And as of January of 2018, 21 states had sued the Federal Communications Commission to restore its original rules. We covered that on Voice of the People Radio, so we're following up with this. We're also likely to see a flood of new lawsuits in the 10-day window following the publication of the new rules in the Federal Register. Now, even if all these measures fail, let's all go to our happy place and remember the FCC Inspector General's corruption investigation into Ajit Pai's dealing with the Sinclair Broadcasting. It's been all too clear that as FCC Chairman, Pai is serving the interests of big corporations, and he might have been doing it on their explicit instructions. There is time to fix the damage that he's doing, but it would also be nice to see him held accountable for doing in private what is so obnoxious to do in public. I mean, it's just, going back to different positions that have been taken in the past. It's you know, it's a corporate excuse making. Really, it's what it is. Corporate excuse making. And we talked about the lobby groups that had been put together to take to task the internet neutrality rules being overthrown and the big companies that are paying for that. On previous broadcasts here with Voice of the People Radio on United Public Radio Network, I'm sure if you go back through the archive or go search us on SoundCloud.com, you'll find mention in previous Voice of the People Radio over the last 6 months about these various goings on with the Federal Communications Commission. And we do our best to follow up with this stuff. And you know, it's just like when we talked about Governor Rick Scott of Florida signing the gun bill following the, you know, the school shooting. And then the new Florida gun law led to its first gun seizure. And we do the best we can with filling in when something happens. We don't intentionally neglect to follow up on what happens, but we end up with, you know, repetition of the same thing. You know, and I'm sorry to have to say it, but, you know, quite realistically, it's not a rip on the FCC chairman thing, but the internet, as you know it, is about to cease to exist because the repeal of internet neutrality allows bad things to happen. Meaning that if you can't afford to pay for it, you're not going to be able to have access to it at all. It's, you know, kind of like people with cell phones. When cell phones were introduced into the market for consumers, it was prohibitively expensive. What did those people have access to? They had the ability basically to use a telephone from anywhere. Everyone else didn't have it. Six more big internet companies have joined the legal fight against the Federal Communications Commission's net neutrality rollback. Six major tech companies joining the legal battle over net neutrality announced plans yesterday to sue the Federal Communications Commission. Now, Foursquare, Etsy, Expa, Shutterstock, Kickstarter, and Automattic, which owns WordPress.com, said they would challenge the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC's new order overturning net neutrality protections in court. Under a nonprofit called the Coalition for Internet Openness, the company said they filed a petition with the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit on Monday, requesting the court review the FCC's decision. In December, the commission's Republican majority voted to roll back net neutrality rules that had prohibited broadband service providers from blocking or throttling content or creating fast lanes to provide better service to companies that pay for it. We believe that everyone has the right to access information on places, spaces, and people, and that business leaders and brands need to be able to interpret trends and patterns as they truly exist, said Mark Ellenbogen, Foursquare's Chief Compliance Officer and General Counsel. The coalition joins a slew of other tech companies that announced lawsuits against the FCC late last month, including Mozilla, the nonprofit organization that maintains the Firefox web browser, and the video sharing website Vimeo. On February 22, 2018, a coalition of 23 state attorneys general challenged the FCC in the District of Columbia Circuit, alleging the new order violated federal law, including the Communications Act of 1934. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who led the coalition, accused the FCC of putting corporate profits over consumers by giving broadband providers the ability to control what their customers see, do, and say online. Multiple public interest groups, including Free Press, Public Knowledge, and New America's Open Technology Institute, have likewise filed petitions challenging the FCC order. The fight for net neutrality is the fight for civil liberties and a more vibrant culture, said Candace Martin, commercial counsel for Kickstarter. Without it, the free and equal exchange of ideas is at risk. So there you go. It's still an ongoing battle. And, you know, we're going to see exactly how that turns out. I mean, it's just another really bizarre one on here, you know, because crap that's related to more crap, but it's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Democrats in the upper chamber of Congress, is very concerned about what will happen to people screwing once the Federal Communications Commission puts its new rules enabling internet service providers to violate net neutrality principles into effect in a little under 2 months. Today, on Tuesday, Chuck Schumer's official Twitter account inquired whether allowing internet service providers to discriminate against content providers like Netflix would have a detrimental impact on the boning rates of the nation's couples. In fairness to Senator Schumer, anyone who has experienced a constantly buffering Netflix or HBO Go stream knows that it does, in fact, kind of ruin the mood. When the man's right, he's right. On the other hand, in extreme unfairness to Chuck Schumer, it was probably a bad idea to tell him, or any other senator for that matter, about Netflix and chilling. Now, regardless, Chuck Schumer and other Democrats are doing what they can do to save net neutrality. It's possible that Senate leadership will succeed in securing one more vote there sometime this spring, which would grant in one chamber the majority necessary to invoke the Congressional Review Act and overrule the FCC's decision. Unfortunately, the chances of that kind of coup are near nil in the House, where Democrats are over 100 lawmakers short of getting such a vote passed the Republican majority. Even were it to pass in both houses, President Donald Trump holds veto power that, let's face it, he'd probably use. Chuck Schumer said today he plans to emphasize net neutrality as an issue going into the 2018 midterms in the very unlikely scenario that Democrats' current legislative efforts fail, while lawmakers' lawsuits of varying likelihood of success, excuse me, for the folks, I'm being bombarded by crap. In the very likely scenario that the Democrats' current legislative efforts fail, while lawsuits of varying likelihood of success are being prepped by internet advocacy groups with the support of major tech giants as well as 23 states' attorneys general, none of these efforts may come to anything beyond forcing Republicans to own the fallout when the internet service providers inevitably begin abusing customers and content providers in the post-net neutrality world. But it's something, at least. So there you go. Chuck Schumer is worried about whether or not you're going to have your romantic interlude with your loved one and your HBO stream interrupted by buffering. Which is so sad. Really? So, beyond his concerns, hopefully, you know, they will be mounting something. Tammy Jo Schultz, reportedly one of the pilots responsible for landing the Southwest Airlines Flight 1380 that experienced an engine explosion earlier today, was also one of the first women pilots in the Navy and one of the first women to fly the FA-18 fighter jet. So there you go. Very, very cool. Very, very cool there. The IRS's direct payment system crashed hard today on Tuesday, which happens to be the filing deadline for returns from 2017. As a result, numerous taxpayers who waited until the last minute complained that they would be forced to turn to high-fee alternative methods or brave Mad Max-style conditions at the post office. The government is also saying that the IRS is going to give people more time to file. So if you haven't gotten your taxes in, try to get those in before midnight tonight. At least get them postmarked before midnight tonight. You know, and really, really bad things about what happens with privacy and internet security. The Department of Justice's Amber Alert website is redirecting visitors to a hardcore porn website. And this is updated because this was brought to attention before, but it's even worse now. A website run by the United States Justice Department used to gather information about missing and abducted children is redirecting visitors to porn sites with names such as Schoolgirl Porn and Ungrateful Huge Boobs Indian Wife Being a Slut. A redirect bug on the amberalert.gov allows anyone to create backlinks on the Department of Justice run website. Functionality apparently too good to pass up for some porn bots. The Amber Alert site is being manipulated by at least a half dozen porn sites and an untold number of others, likely in a sad attempt to boost their Google rankings. Amber Alert, for those without a cell phone or a radio, is the emergency broadcast system used by law enforcement in all 50 states to raise the alarm when there's reasonable belief that a child has been abducted. So, at the time of this article being posted on the internet, it's possible to alter the .gov's website URL and generate an unvalidated redirect page bearing Department of Justice and Amber Alert logos, which can be used to send visitors anywhere on the World Wide Web. Porn bots are known to crawl the web and search for this specific type of redirect flaw. By generating backlinks across the internet, a porn site can theoretically improve its Google page rank score, the system used by Google to determine how high a web page should go in your search results. This is like the 1990s called and wants its vulnerable redirect script back, said Adriel DeSaltes, founder of the penetration testing firm NetraGuard. I like the fact that you have a problem and you have to go to a penetration testing firm because of porn bots. While this barely counts as a security vulnerability, as it doesn't actually endanger the Department of Justice network in any way, it could be used by a crafty social engineer to trick users into downloading malwares or send them to a fake web page as part of a phishing campaign. For some credulous users, the fact that they're being redirected from a government website may lend an air of legitimacy to an otherwise suspicious link. The user-generated redirect pages still bear a disclaimer warning users that they're leaving the Department of Justice's network. However, if a visitor remains on the redirect page for more than a few seconds, it automatically redirects the user to the offending porn site. This adds an extra layer of absurdity to a comical flaw on the website of a government agency that spends much of its time trying to convince tech companies to purposefully weaken encryption standards and thus imperil United States consumers. Anyone can use this page to redirect someone to another potentially malicious site. For example, this could be used to redirect an unsuspecting victim to a site that deploys malware. It doesn't really put the Department of Justice at risk, but it puts people on the internet at risk and oddly seems to be helping the porn industry. Now, media did report this issue to Department of Justice this afternoon on Tuesday, and they're awaiting a response. As it turns out, there appear to be a lot of U.S. government websites running faulty redirect scripts. Weather.gov and the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, for instance, are pointing to what appear to be bestiality pages. So there you go. You know, don't lose your sense of humor, folks. We really haven't lost ours here, but It's kind of disturbing to notice that somebody could go to NOAA to look up the weather and end up with girl versus dog porn, sex with horse free porn appearing in their links on their page. Weather.gov, two hot Russians love animal porn hyphen dog hyphen animal porn online for free. So if you're, you know, if you are on weather.gov and you get redirected, complain to your congressman and your senator. You know, let them know. This is why you want to support net neutrality, so you don't have Russian dog loving porn showing up when you are at weather.gov. With that being said, hopefully you are now not all cruising over to Surf for the Amber Alert website just to see if you end up with porn showing up on your browser. If you'd like to have something show up on your browser, go over to uprntalkradio.com. Click the YouTube, go over to the YouTube channel for the station and subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We promise we will not have illegitimate backlinks to Russian bestiality dog porn or weather.gov or Chuck Schumer. There you go. Depending on which one of those that you think is the worst. If you have an opinion on that, you can send it to voicethepeopleradio@gmail.com or voicethepeopleradio@hotmail.com. Of course, always take down the station call-in number for the live shows, 504-273-7379. Call in live during the show on Saturdays, and we will be back with you on Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So join us then, and have a great night, everybody.